From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Good afternoon, Mid-Michigan and outside of Mid-Michigan. I'm Alex Sharg, not Al Martin today. But don't worry, since it's Columbus Day, we're going to make matters worse and talk all Ohio State football down in Columbus. No, just kidding. We're not going to talk Ohio State football. Again, I'm filling in for Al today. Michigan State football had an interesting weekend. University of Michigan pulled one out. And what do you do if you're the Detroit Tigers? All that and more. I'll be throwing you some Al-isms while we're at it. But first, let's throw it to Jock DeWitt with the current sports quick hit headliners.
I'm Jock DeWitt, and this is your current sports quick hit headliners for Monday, October 13. Corot High School has decided to cut short their football season after several players suffered season-ending injuries and five had concussions. After moving up younger players, the coach and the team ultimately decided that it was in the best interest of the team to forfeit their final three games. MSU Women's Volleyball sweeps Iowa. Michigan State had several offensive contributors and mounted a balanced attack as it swept Iowa 3-0 on a Saturday night at Jennison Fieldhouse. The Spartans, who are 10-7 overall and 3-3 in the Big Ten, have not lost a set to the Hawkeyes since 2010, a streak of eight straight matches. Iowa falls to 8-9 and 0-6 in conference play. The Spartans start a four-match road swing next weekend, playing at Maryland on Friday and at Rutgers on Saturday. The number 19 Michigan State men's soccer team won against Wisconsin 2-1 on Saturday afternoon. The Spartans improved to 7-2-2 on the season and 2-1-1 in Big Ten with goals from Zach Carroll and Adam Montague. Michigan State returns to action on Wednesday, October 15 at 4 p.m. to take on the Western Michigan Broncos at DeMartin Stadium. Battling inclement weather and a tough field, the Michigan State men's golf team tied for a seventh place at the Rod Meyers Invitational in Durham, North Carolina on Sunday. Due to the weather delays, the tournament was shortened to a 36-hole tournament. This was the first time in the five-year history of the event it has been impacted by weather. The Spartans return to action on the road on October 27 and 28, traveling to Vero Beach, Florida for the Quail Valley Collegiate. The Michigan State Spartans football team was able to down the Boilermakers 45-31 in West Lafayette. Halfback Jeremy Langford had his 10th consecutive Big Ten 100-yard rushing game. Senior receiver Tony Lippitt continued his hot start, snagging seven passes for 138 yards and a touchdown, while junior linebacker Darian Harris sealed the game with a pick six late in the fourth quarter. The Wolverines held off the Nittany Lions 18-13 after trailing 13-10 at halftime. Wide receivers Amara Darbo and Devin Funchess combined to catch 11 passes for 135 yards, with Funchess' score being U of M's lone touchdown. In a game that saw playmakers Reggie Bush and Calvin Johnson inactive for the Lions, Detroit was able to defeat the Vikings 17-3 on Sunday. The Lions defense picked off rookie quarterback Teddy Bridgewater three times, twice by Tahir Whitehead, and defensive end Ziggy Ansah recorded a game-high 2.5 sacks and also forced a fumble. The Detroit Pistons received a bit of a scare this past weekend when second-year guard Kentavious Caldwell-Pope sprained his knee in a preseason game. During Sunday's exhibition game against the Washington Wizards, he came out of the game with 4:54 left in the third quarter and never returned to action because of the injury. Up until that point, he had scored 12 points on 5 of 11 shooting. Caldwell Pope and the Pistons received good news when the MRI today showed no long-term concerns with the knee and only some muscle irritation. The Red Wings lost to the Ducks 3-2 after Ryan Getzlaf shot a goal past Jimmy Howard in the final minute of the third period. The Red Wings' next matchup is Wednesday night at home versus the Boston Bruins. The Cardinals evened the NLCS at one game apiece after Colton Wong hit a walk-off home run to right field. The Cardinals, who were last in home runs this season, hit four home runs in their Game 2 5-4 win. The Royals look to go up 3-0 against the Orioles today. Wei-Yin Chen will face off against Jeremy Guthrie. The Royals have yet to lose this postseason after starting 7-0, including a wild-card win over the Oakland A's and a series sweep of the LA Angels in the ALDS. That's it for your current sports quick hit headliners. Time to send it back to Alex.
Yes, those are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Monday, October 13th on Columbus Day. If you're just tuning in, I'm Alex Sharg filling in for the beloved Al Martin, who's actually down in Columbus on Columbus Day. How ironic. And he's spending some, he actually was there for the weekend for his birthday. He was spending some time with his significant other, and he'll be back tomorrow. But before then, like I talked about at the top of the hour, just real quickly, right now we're going to talk all MSU football up until about 1:20-ish. We'll say 1:20, 1:25. Then at 1:25, we'll get into Michigan football. And then at 1:40, we'll have Jock DeWitt in here, and we'll talk Lions and how they were able to pull one out against the Minnesota Vikings. And at the end of the show, 1:50 hour, we'll be talking, what do you do if you're the general manager of the Tigers? Who do you trade, if anyone? Who do you sign back? Who do you go after? And a whole lot more. But let me remind you real quickly that the phone lines are now open. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. But to start the show, I'm sure everybody was tuned to their televisions on Saturday as Michigan State went down to Purdue, to West Lafayette, and they held on to beat them 45-31. Some quick stats real quickly. Connor Cook had 19 completions of 238 yards in the first half. Jeremy Langford, 100-plus yards for his 10th consecutive Big Ten game. Wow, he keeps racking them up. Nick Hill had 72 yards and two touchdowns. Delton Williams even got in the game this time around with four touches on 44 yards. The offense had a total of 532 yards. Yards, 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 yards. That seems to be the theme. MSU, though, they had a 21-point lead in the fourth until a pick, a Connor Cook interception. It could have been a pick six, but Cook threw an interception. It led to a running touchdown and then a punt return touchdown, and it brought them within seven. Purdue was right at the door, but then at the end of the game, Purdue had the ball. Austin Appleby was phenomenal the whole game. He threw an interception to Darian Harris, who sealed the deal. He returned it for a touchdown to bring the lead back to 14. MSU held on 45-31. But to preface this whole conversation, the looming topic, and again, I mean, this is going everywhere if you're talking MSU football today. Does MSU lose focus in late-game situations? That seems to be the common theme. Everybody has an opinion on that, if they did or they don't. A lot of questionable calls at the end of the game. A lot of people thought the fake punt was uncalled for in the fourth quarter. A lot of people, I'm looking on Twitter, are thinking that Connor Cook, with the interception, he was losing it. The play calling with Connor Cook, why are you having him run? I saw an iSports web article say, you're going to risk an injury for running Connor Cook in the fourth quarter when you're up 21 points. I saw some more content online about why passing the ball when you're up 21 points and why not run the ball. You're already having 150 plus yards on the ground throughout the game. So a lot of questionable decision making by the MSU coaches, and I have a clear opinion on that, but I want to hear what you have to say first. 517-355-9527 at 1:15. We're going to have a special guest call in, hint, hint, from Columbus on Columbus Day. And he, I'm sure, will weigh in on this topic. But just to start, until we get some callers, my take on this is I'm not buying at all that MSU is losing focus in late-game situations. In a minute before the show, I'm ready. I'm prepped to talk about why Michigan State is not losing focus. And I'm looking on Twitter, and a tweet comes from a buddy of mine named Tyler Beck. And it's a column by Joe Rex wrote from the Detroit Free Press that MSU succeeds by avoiding the late letdown. So it's not the fact that they are losing focus and they're almost giving up the games, but Rex wrote has taken the angle that they are going a leg up and not letting any game letdowns happen like in years past. And that's kind of where I side with this whole issue. And just to start with the problems with Connor Cook and the late-game interception, in the first half, I mean, he was pretty much stellar. Like I said, 19 of 238 yards. He made some bad throws. There were a couple that might have been costly. If you remember, he threw one in the end zone to Monty Medeiros over on the left sideline. If you're going right to left on the radio dial, he was looking for Monty, the closest side left corner. But unfortunately, he underthrew the ball, Monty dived for it, and it was almost interception. It went right through the hands, but at the same time, that was one throw. And if you listen to the broadcast, a lot of the announcers were hounding on Cook for lifting up his back foot, and that was kind of the reasons why he was maybe inaccurate on some throws. You saw a couple throws in the slot that were a little off target, but overall, at the end of the day, I'm not buying that there are any problems with Cook. I mean, this is a gamer. This is a guy who threw an interception at the Rose Bowl. This is a guy who's thrown interceptions before. He's also a guy who's also made bad passes before. This is nothing new. No quarterback is perfect. So to hound on Cook for throwing the interception and not being on top of his game, he knows. I mean, it's the reason why at the end of the game, I don't know if you missed it, but Cook went on to say that the safety dropped down onto the right flat. They disguised the safety. He knew what he did wrong, and he didn't make another interception in the game. So for those of you out there that are saying, Cook threw the pick, he's not on his game, he's not like he was in the first, please, save it. Save that opinion. I personally think there's no other supporting fact to basically say that he wasn't on his game. He's not perfect. Yeah, his completion percentage was low, but they've still put up 45 points on the board. He still passed for over 200 yards. It's not like he's dangling around 100 yards passing on the day. So that's the first point I have to make, is the whole Connor Cook thing. The second point that a lot of fans are hounding on is the fake punt in the fourth quarter. I know you saw the game. You were watching it. You might have been screaming at your TV. What are you doing, D'Antonio? Why not? At your own, whatever, 25, 30-yard line, whatever it was. You're running a fake punt. You're up, 21 points. Or I think when they ran it was 14 points, if I'm not mistaken. And what's the point of running a fake punt with, you're up 14 points? Why not punt the ball away, make your defense, just hold Purdue like they were during the game, and let them close it out? But the thing with the fake punt is Mark D'Antonio is resilient in the way that he knows exactly the right time to call trick plays. With the double end around sweeps, I mean, look what happened with Little Giants. Look what happened with Mike Sadler's other punt returns. Every time there's been a fake punt from Mike Sadler, they've been called at the perfect time. The team isn't expecting it. It's in a situation that's a little bizarre, such as this one. And at the end of the day, I have no problem personally with the fake punt. They just didn't execute it, like D'Antonio said in the postgame. You saw them miss the blocks. LT missed the block. Purdue was certainly not expecting it. They had all their corners running upfield, to kind of guard the kick return, the punt return. They were pretty much saying it's not like they had a punt blitz on it. Purdue wasn't expecting to play. The problem with it, and this is why, I thought that the ends on the punt coverage got around to Sadler, was because the tackles on that line, or whoever was guarding the outside to the punt return, the Michigan State outside guys, they kind of went inside, didn't necessarily block the outside. So you saw Purdue's punt return coverage guys run right around to Mike Sadler on the outside. You had three guys back. You had Lawrence Thomas, might have been Pendleton, and maybe one other guy back there that also were there for extra protection, but they were looking forward too. So, hey, you can't be perfect. I'm not hounding on it as much as a lot of people are. You're blaming D'Antonio for the call. I just don't see. I have no problem with the fake punt. They just certainly missed the blocks. If they made the blocks, honestly, I think Sadler would have made the first down. And as much as, yeah, it's at the own 20-30-yard line, but that's the point. You do the unexpected. The point of the fake punt, I mean, what do you think? You're going to do a fake punt at the 54? That's predictable. I have no problem with it. That's my second main point. And the third point I got to make is the play calling. A lot of fans are hounding for, you got your running backs up 100 yards, you're winning late. But isn't that the same problem that fans hounded on against Nebraska last week, was that they were being too conservative and they didn't pass the ball enough? Well, look, fan, I mean, this time they passed the ball like you wanted. So I don't understand the whole pity party thing going on about Michigan State passing the ball with the big lead. With Purdue, they were passing pretty well on the day. Lippitt had 138 yards. They had no problem beating Purdue's corners the whole day. The linebackers, they had their senior linebacker out. The slots, R.J. Shelton had a field day running those end-arounds. They had no problem linking up over the middle. They had no problem passing the ball, running the ball. The total offense was just dominant. So for people hounding that Michigan State's offense should have passed the ball or should have ran it more when they are already successful running the ball. That's a part of play calling. You're not up there in the booth. I have no problem with the passing, the pick, the interception, but let them back in the game. Things happen. I mean, that's all I got to say. I don't know what you think. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Going to read a tweet right here from TJ Siegerlin. I wish I got to this earlier. But TJ says, MSU was hurt by playing starters for 1 to 2 quarters in 3 games. Not enough late game situations versus EMU, JSU, and Wyoming. Hey, that's the other thing about this is that when you look at it, Lippitt had 130 yards, Cooks passing 200, 300 yards a game, but that's only for a half. Imagine if these guys are getting experience for the late quarters of the game. They might not have this issue. This is the first game in a while, aside from Nebraska, that they're in the game late. And also keep in mind that this is the first time that Michigan State went on the road for a month. I mean, they're going to have a little bit of rust at coming off the end maybe. At the start, they look pretty flawless, but with the defense wearing down a little bit, hey, I mean, it's the first road game of the year. I mean, if this is a reoccurring thing, if every week you're seeing the defense let it down at the end of the game or more bad play calling, okay, save it then. But for right now, I'm not hounding on it. Again, 517-355-9527. As promised, at 1:15, like I said at the beginning of the hour, we would have a special guest calling in on this Columbus Day. And it turns out he's in Columbus. We're now joined by WKAR's current sports host, Al Martin, who's on the other side of things today. What's up, Al?
Hey, Shark. How you doing, my man?
Hey, I'm just trying to get my rants out while I can.
I'd say it's kind of weird me calling him on my own show, dude. It's kind of like an out-of-body experience, dude. It's weird, man. Yeah. I tell you, I'm never flying standby ever again, okay? Ever. Flight was full. Now I'm pushed to come tonight.
So. You need a sixth sense for that one, man.
I do. I know, right? It's like a crapshoot sometimes, you know?
Yeah. But anyways, tell me what you heard so far when you called in, what you heard me harping on, maybe your thoughts on MSU, just to start.
Well, first off, I definitely have to agree with you that for all the Spartan fans out there listening, I do not think that it is time to hit the panic meter right now. Even though this is an alarm concern. To be real, I mean, looking at these past 2 weeks and how this Michigan State team has frankly, struggled a bit to close out games, now we know that this isn't a fluke. Because looking at last week, I mean, playing Nebraska, and I'm sitting there like, okay, I think this team just got a little bit complacent, got a little bit too relaxed. I'm pretty sure they were harping on it all practice, probably each and every day last week. And they came into this game ideally with that collective mindset. But seeing as though this did happen again against a Purdue team on the road, Purdue even with a chance to tie that game and possibly to send it in overtime as that game dwindled down, it definitely is a concern. And Alex, I definitely want to hit on it's that word, that C word I'm always talking about, complacency. Coming into this year, one of the biggest things I wanted to see from this team and what D'Antonio really addressed time after time after time is how this team deals with success. Any team that plays the Spartans this year knows that they have an opportunity. They have a golden opportunity to try and knock off the defending Rose Bowl champs. Michigan State hasn't had this aura and that entree in I don't know how long, since the 80s, Alex. So you're going to get a team's best shot, and nothing, you can take nothing for granted. I don't care how big of a lead the lead may seem for the Spartans. They have to approach each and every drive with a sense of, hey, we got to close this thing out. Now, looking at that game, though, Alex, for me, and I think you hit it right on the head. I thought Connor Cook played great. Connor Cook, if you look at it, he threw for 238 yards, 3 touchdowns. Of course, yes, he had the bloop at the end of that, in that fourth quarter. It was the interception that he knew. I mean, as soon as you release that, it's just a bad throw. A bad throw that sort of, really changed the momentum of that game. Overall, though, I saw Cook was very solid. The overall offense was great. We didn't even talk about Langford, and Nick Hill and Tony Lippitt. Those guys were great as well. Connor Cook, how about, that pass to Josiah Price? I mean, my goodness, floating it right over the defenders. Then he finds Aaron Burbridge later on with the beautiful, beautiful throw and beautiful grab in the back of the end zone. Overall, I was happy with the way the offense played. Now, for me, though, you know, it's interesting. You brought up Joe Rexroth, his article today, his column on what went on just his overall take on the Spartans. And I really agree with him on this. And it's something I said after that game. I don't think it was more so defensive woes that led to Purdue making a game out of it late. It was really the offense, if you ask me. The offense kind of went just kind of silent, didn't they, Alex? I don't know if you – did you feel that way at all? Because I felt as though down that game, especially with the interception and with the fake punt, the offense just kind of went quiet. And to address the fake punt as well, I kind of have a different take with you on that, Alex. I feel as though Michigan State fake punting at that moment in the game, it wasn't needed. It definitely wasn't needed. And the message it sends – to the opposing team, when you fake a punt in that type of moment, when you really didn't need to, it kind of elicits a mood of desperation or panic. Almost like, okay, we got a chink in the armor on this team, seeing as though they're about to fake a punt here when they really don't need it. It sent the wrong message and really opened the door for Purdue to elicit some confidence, especially once it didn't work. So I'll start there with it.
Yeah, man, I totally agree with a lot of the things you said. The two things I think we got to discuss real quick on the air is, one, the fake punt, but let's start with actually the offense going quiet. Mm-hmm. At the end of the game, I mean, well, basically the last drive after the interception, do you remember, Al, what the play calling was, what type of plays they ran, run or pass and whatnot, after that interception?
Near the end of the game?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, a lot of the criticism, as you just kind of alluded to, is that Michigan State, they should have ran the ball more.
Right.
And, you know, it's so funny, though, because when you talked about that, I kind of had a flashback back to the Nebraska game where D'Antonio got criticized for running the ball more to run down some clock. And, you know, now it's kind of the opposite from week to week.
Yeah. Well, see, at the end of the game, after that Connor Cook interception, first couple plays, they're running the ball. I mean, they're not going to go and have him throw right away again. They're going to kind of lean him back into it, get ready. And, of course, Purdue's expecting that. I mean, what do you expect? You're going to have your quarterback go out there and throw the ball the first play back on the drive? Of course not. But at the end of the game, like you said, they were passing the ball a lot. It changes week to week. But at those last two drives at the end of the game where the offense was going quiet, I mean, there was a lot of momentum with Purdue there. A lot of momentum. You heard it in the stands. It wasn't really talked about. And me staring at my TV, you know, you're not really there, so you can't even really understand the momentum. But, I mean, with that interception and then the touchdown and then the punt return touchdown, the fans were going crazy. I mean, that was their chance to get back in the game, that last stand they made to get the ball back to Appleby, you know, back in the 20-yard line when MSU was trying to end the game there with 4 minutes to go. I mean, Purdue was going nuts. I mean, that's the momentum part of football, I think, Al. So with the offense going quiet at the end of the game, they were on the whole game. They put up 45 points, for goodness sake. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, as you always say, Al, dollar bill, Cook was on fire, man. At the end of the day, they still had a terrific performance. The offense went a little quiet, sure, at the end of the game. But for me, that just has to be with momentum in a Wade Stadium. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, and you know what? Another aspect I want to talk about is that MSU defense. I mean, you know, it was really one of the things that stood out to me in that game was, if you remember, it was a moment, especially as that game dwindled down and Purdue starts going a little bit of a run as the game dwindled down. I mean, Narduzzi, he was on the sidelines. He was fiery. I mean, he was talking to his guys like, what in the world is going on wrong here? But they made adjustments, though. I will say about this Michigan State defense. Michigan State's defense, I thought, it's one of those things, looking throughout that game, where, if you remember, the Michigan State defense kind of struggled early at halftime. I mean, it was almost within a touchdown in that game. And, you know, it was a lot of bubble screens that MSU was getting beat on left and right. And after halftime, it seemed like Michigan State just kind of shut that down. They put more pressure on the quarterback, and things sort of started to change. But there were a few missed defensive assignments that led to those big gains, those big runs late in the game that put Purdue in the game. But I will say this. This Michigan State defense, though, Alex, I know it has a spotlight on it, because anytime you win a Rose Bowl and you have the number one ranked defense, mm-hmm. the year after, I mean, you know, it's either two things. People expect you to take a step back, seeing as though the pieces that you lost, or people believe that, hey, okay, if your system is true, and hey, if Pat Narduzzi is truly one of the best defensive coordinators in the entire nation, prove it. You know, show that you still are among the top defenses, and we expect you to go out there and do your job. This Michigan State defense is still great, Alex. It's an above-average type of defense that can compete with any defense in its entire nation. I do believe that. And they in that game against Purdue, they stepped up when they needed to step up. And that last and those last drives, I mean, you saw interception. They got great pressure, outstanding pressure on the QB, which led to the interception. They made the stops and totally shut down that Purdue offense when they needed to. That effort was missing throughout spots of that fourth quarter, and I do believe complacency set in for that MSU defense too. But when they wanted to shut Purdue down, they did that, and making that a consistent thing from week to week is key.
Al, we're gelling like apple and honeys today, man. I mean, we're literally on the same page here.
This is crazy. This never happened.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, for Purdue, and that's the thing, is they made the stop when they needed. Austin Appleby played terrific the whole game. You know, he's going out there. They had some QB controversies at the beginning of the year. And this is the guy that Pat Narduzzi actually recruited at one point, by the way, Al, was
right,
Appleby.
Yeah, yeah.
He comes out there. You know, he's got Shalik Calhoun running at him, the, you know, the what do you call it, the animal without a leash, as he always says. And he's running at the guy. Harris is right there for the pick. If he was smart enough, he would just throw the ball away. But at the end of the day, the defense was just too much. I totally agree, man. That defense just proved that they can handle it when it mattered most. Absolutely. Now, the last point before we get you off here for a second, or feel free to stay on, man. Your show. You know it.
Yeah.
But the fake punt at the end. You know, they're in their 20-30-yard line. Lawrence Thomas gets the snap. He runs it. I think earlier I said Mike Sadler, which honestly at this point, maybe it should have been Sadler. Maybe he would have had more blocking there to run the punt. They kind of gave him a little direct snap. But at the end of the day, Al, I still feel that you need a little bit of an unexpectedness. As much as, they didn't need it, but a lot of the great fake plays that Michigan State's ever ran, they didn't need it. At the end of the game with Little Giants years ago, did they need that play? They could have just tied the game. I mean, they were there for field goal range. But they did the unexpected. But nobody was expecting it. I thought it was a fine call, honestly.
Yeah, well, for me, I mean, it's one of those calls. In any trick play, for that matter, and I want to, you know, definitely hit on this before I dive into it, is that when you call a play like that, when you call a fake punt or a fake field goal to try and get a first down or to win the game, frankly, I mean, it's one of those plays, pretty much all of them, about 80% of them, is one of those plays where if it's successful, you look like Albert Einstein. But if it's not, you can completely look like an idiot, you know, and you're definitely going to get that criticism, that warranted criticism from fans and say, okay, why did you do it? For me, I felt as though, and you compare it to kind of the Little Giants, this is kind of a totally different situation. And when comparing the two, I guess you could say, or when comparing the past fake plays from D'Antonio in the past, I mean, I felt as though this was a game Michigan State was leading. It wasn't a game where, you know, they had to make this play in order to put the stop on the win or to sort of win or to win the game, period. I thought it wasn't needed. If anything, when you call a play like that, that early in the fourth, with the lead, it kind of shows a sense of desperation. Like, okay, if these guys are trying fake punts for first downs, well, there's a reason why they're trying that. You know, maybe they're afraid of our offense. And that sort of gives the offense a little bit of confidence, which I think, frankly, did once that stop incurred. And for the defensive measures, they could say, okay, well, why is this call being called when you got one of the best defenses in the nation? Are you not confident the defense is going to make the stop and seal this win for you? I mean, it can send a variances amount of different messages to your opponent, and also on the flip side of that MSU defense, that really can bode not in your favor. It didn't work. It ended up being one of those momentum changers in the game, and therefore D'Antonio is being criticized for it, as well as I can definitely see why. Me personally, I wouldn't have gone for a fake field goal that that early in the fourth quarter. It wasn't needed. Trust your defense in that moment.
I hear you, and that's the thing is us being here at Michigan State. Sometimes we had one caller that say you guys are the MSU show now, and that's the thing. I'm not riding the bus here with D'Antonio and just totally backing them no matter what. Sure, I agree. You're going to warrant that criticism. If you don't execute it, you look dumb, and if you execute it, you look like Einstein. That's the thing here. But although he didn't execute it, wouldn't you rather have him do it when you're up 14, 21 points compared to when you're up 7? Like that's the thing, Al. It's like they had the cushion to work with.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, you really don't. If you got a lead in the game, I mean, you don't need it, you know? I mean, those are type of plays, those type of trick plays like that, Alex, are moments where, okay, when you need a score, then you pull off something like that. Michigan State didn't need it. I mean, they could just stretch their defense and just play the game out. It's not like they needed that play to win the game.
They didn't need it to win, Al. But I would say if they executed that fake punt, I mean, and keep in mind, that was right after the interception. They probably would have went on with the offense, probably ran the ball more. I could have saw them just closing out the game, or just running the ball, running upfield.
Yeah, I just don't see where it was warranted, though. And but you know, I definitely see your opinion and where you're going with it. I just didn't feel a need to do that, though. I don't know.
Fair enough. There you have it. 517-355-9527. Do you think the fake punt was needed like Al Martin, or do you think that D'Antonio was just, I don't know, maybe he was hoping for something a little bit better? 517-355-9527. Again, we have Al Martin on the phone, not here at the mic, but he's actually in Columbus celebrating. So, Al, you're in Columbus right now on Columbus Day, man. What's that like? Are they doing some crazy celebrations down there or what?
Yeah, that's how ironic is that, right? Didn't plan this at all. But I tell you what, I'm inside right now. So, I mean, it seems as though there are a lot of cars. Actually, probably at work. So I don't know. I don't see any celebration. I'm pretty sure there's something going on. I just have not looked into it. So
there you go. Al Martin, host of Current Sports, calling in. Can't believe this. Al, you going to stick around for a little bit more? Go ahead, man.
Yeah.
You going to stick around? Great. We're going to have Al stick around, and we'll jump to a break. Coming up, Michigan. On the way back, I'm sure Al has some comments on that. We'll be back in a few. More Current Sports coming up. Rocking out on this Monday on WKAR's Current Sports. I'm not Al Martin, although I'll be throwing you some Al-isms as much as I can. Alex Sharg filling in, usually behind the glass. This time around, Aaron Young queuing up that awesome rock music. The former Impact station manager here, who's got the best taste in rock. So anyway, we are joined by Al, though. As much as this is his off day, he's still calling in, still giving his opinions on Michigan State. But overall, I mean, we both agree at the end of the day, Al, Purdue and Nebraska were both good teams. Michigan State, they still held on, and it's just not worth harping on it. But another team, Al, as we'll move on now, is the University of Michigan football team, who were able to hold on as well against Penn State at home. Just some quick stats before we get into some analysis there. Penn State held to 214 total yards of offense. Leadership of Devin Garner, I mean, there's a lot to say here, Alan, and you're the one to basically harp that Devin Garner is the guy for Michigan. Just to start, Al, did this game basically hold your point?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, it definitely reiterates that Devin Garner, I mean, the move shouldn't have happened in the first place to pull Devin out and to start Shane Morris. I think, you know, everybody knows that now. Devin Garner, looking at the entire personnel at the quarterback position for this U of M team, Devin Garner gives you the best chance to win. Point blank, period. I don't think that's any surprise. But, you know, and you know, really, I thought it was a very gritty performance from Devin Garner. I don't know if you agree, Alex, but looking at, you know, how he got injured, you know, in that third quarter, and he comes back in the game, still plays. I mean, he hobbles off the field. I'm sitting like, oh my goodness. I mean, this game could completely do a 180. I mean, this kind of opens the door now for Penn State to possibly take the lead and win this game. But that didn't happen. The exact opposite happened. You saw, you know, Michigan kind of just step on the throat of the Nittany Lions. And Devin Garner, after he got injured, remember, the next two drives after the injury, he leads U of M to score, you know, for kick field goals. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
It is.
Effort from Devin. I thought he played a very gritty game. A game to show that, hey, even though everything that's going on with this Michigan team, you know, seems to be going haywire, hey, there's still some fight in us. And I definitely Devin showed that as an example in that game. But overall, I think, you know, that definitely was a story in the game. Devin was also. But Alex, how about that Michigan defense? Oof, yeah. Wasn't that impressive? I you just talked about the help. PSU, the 214 yards. I don't believe PSU, they didn't score at all in the second half. So a second half shutout from the Michigan defense in the second half. That's unbelievable. Then they had 6 sacks, 11 tackles for losses. The pressure on Christian Hackenberg throughout that game was simply marvelous. And in looking at the stat for Christian Hackenberg, I don't know if you know this, Alex, but did you know that Christian Hackenberg actually has more interceptions than touchdown throws this year?
I did not know that.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable, right?
That is unbelievable, man. Yeah, and basically the big game breaking moment for me by the defense was Frank Clark's. I think they didn't rule it a safety, but it pretty much was at the end of the game when Hackenberg was driving, trying to get him the extra drive. And then he sacked him like 10, 15 yards backfield and just relentless rushing by that Michigan defense. But yeah, absolutely, Al. And the thing, and this was kind of funny, the moment Gardner got injured, I'm thinking, what's going through my head, Al, is I hope that new guy they hired in the replay booth is not going to get harped on just like the Shane Morris ordeal, and that he doesn't get an injury wrong this time around. You know, that was the first thing I thought of was, I hope that guy that they just hired in the booth is going to call an injury right, and that he actually can go back in the game.
So he started having flashbacks.
Yeah,
I mean,
if you looked on Twitter, I mean, people were saying, you know, fire Brady, fire Brandon, another injury, throw him back in the game, you know. And that just, for me, that's not going to get old quickly. But at the end of the day, for this Michigan team, the leadership from Devin Gardner, aside from just him going back in the game and showing his kind of, his relentlessness and going back there to win the game regardless of an injury and playing through it, for me, did you see Devin Gardner on the sidelines hounding at his defense, kind of pumping him up, motivating him to go? That's something
you're only going to
see from a senior redshirt guy like that. You're not going to find that from Shane Morris. If it wasn't for that houndingness on the sideline, I think that definitely contributed to Michigan holding them on that next drive and basically sealing the deal for a win, Al. So I think the leadership qualities of Gardner, especially you see it there on the sideline, that's often ignored, Al.
Yeah, well, without a doubt. And you know what was really interesting? You know, Tom Crawford of who covers U of M. He's been covering U of M for a long, long time. But you know, I remember listening to Tom one day on the air, and Tom, you know, he's in the locker room. He actually went to Michigan Football Media Day, and he talked about how, even though, I mean, you know, Gardner had his moments during the game. I mean, where he just throws errant throws. He actually had one on Saturday, had that one interception. But guys rally behind Devin Gardner. He has a personality that's really contagious, that, you know, his teammates definitely vouch for, and they love him. He's a locker room guy. I mean, they love him. He's very fiery. And yeah, I remember seeing that scene on Saturday, you know, after that great drive when he kicked the field goal and go up and push the lead, you know, and he's on the sideline really going nuts. It looked like a scene from The Exorcist or something like that. I mean, he was unbelievable. I mean, Devin Gardner, I mean, you hopped on it. You hit the nail right on the head, Alex. His leadership, what he brings to the table as far as leadership goes, coupled with the fact that he can not only, at times a little iffy, though, with the way he reads, you know, pass coverage, but he can not only do that at times and in the clutch, he can definitely deliver it on multiple occasions, but he can also burn you on the ground. There's no other quarterback that gives you that type of asset, that dual asset type of QB on this entire Wolverines team. But I thought it was great. And how about the crowd, man?
Yeah.
I mean, what was it, 113,000 total, 113,085 people total at the Big House? That's pretty good. That's the turnout that you want on a primetime stage in lieu of the fact of everything that has gone on wrong with this Michigan team so far this season. Hats off to the fans of Ann Arbor because they came out and supported, man. You got to give love to them.
Absolutely, much needed. Now, just recapping the Big Ten weekend, Al, I know you have some thoughts on, do your bowl chances go up anymore? You saw Arizona lose now to USC and, you know, another team that was slated in. What's your thoughts on Big Ten as a whole?
Yeah, well, as far as the Big Ten goes, I think Michigan State is certainly still showing that they, at the end of the day, despite what has gone on the past 2 weeks with the comebacks in the fourth quarter and so on and so forth, as far as the national outlook of this team, there are still a lot of people that believe Michigan State has a very, very good shot. If they win the Big Ten and everything seems to go right and they don't lose out, you know, the rest of this year, if they win out the rest of this year, I should say, there are still many people nationally that feel as though Michigan State will have a very, very good opportunity at making the 4-team playoff. It's going to be interesting. As far as, you know, the Big Ten East goes, I really think in the East, I mean, you got Michigan State and Ohio State, both the only undefeated teams in the conference. Now, granted, Ohio State has only played one conference game I think you may have a two-man horse race in the Big Ten between Michigan State and Ohio State. Watch out for Rutgers, though. I will say that. Watch out for Rutgers.
Yep.
Rutgers maybe could surprise. As far as the West goes, I mean, for me, the West is kind of up in the air, Alex. I think that Minnesota and Iowa, you know, those are the two only undefeated teams other than, you know, looking at the one-loss teams in Northwestern, Nebraska, Wisconsin. I feel as though anybody can win in the West right now. I mean, it's kind of a crapshoot there. They had Minnesota topping Northwestern on Saturday. I mean, looking at Indiana and Iowa, Iowa gets a big blowout win over Indiana, who granted MSU plays this Saturday. Looking at Illinois and Wisconsin, Wisconsin gets a big win over Illinois. So, I mean, there are a variances of different teams I think they could win in the West. But overall, if Michigan State handles business, if they handle business and win out, I think they will still have a legitimate case at that 14 playoff, Alex.
I sure do agree. And honestly, Al, I mean, you look at the West and the East, whoever wins Michigan State's division, that's going to be the winner, I think, of the Big Ten Conference come playoff. I think you and I can both agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
For the other side, I mean, looking at Wisconsin not playing well, you look at Penn State's recent loss, I think Iowa's a team, man. I mean, look at Kirk Ferentz. He's hanging on his last leg. You hear it every year. When's Iowa going to come through? I think this is it. I think this is make or break for them this year, Al. So I'm really looking at Iowa. Overall, if a Big Ten team is going to make the Power Four playoff, you and I debated it all last week. Mm-hmm. Looking at the Big 12, man, they sure look nice. If you're looking at this weekend, if you saw Baylor's come from behind win, Oklahoma again, I mean, that's the thing. I think the Big 12 team might seal that last spot. And then it shows a lot, Al. I said last week that two SEC teams would be in the Big Four playoff. It shows a lot to see Mississippi State jumping from 3-1. Overtaking Florida State, who has no reason why they shouldn't be one. That shows that the power and the quality of teams in the SEC overtrump any other team, and that's why Mississippi State gained number one in my eyes, Al.
I'm telling you, and how impressive has this Mississippi State team been? I mean, the other MSU is what I call Mississippi State. You know, you got MSU ranked number one right now, Mississippi State, folks. But yeah, Mississippi State is very impressive to see how they've been able to rattle off, you know, a 6-0 record, you know, into be a top, both the AP and USA Today coaches poll. It's unbelievable. It's great to see a team like this, a team that was certainly tremendously overrated. I don't think anybody saw Mississippi State being this good this year, at least at this point in the season. But it's very impressive. And, you know, and even in the AP Top 25, even though MSU is number 8 right now in the AP Top 25, I mean, they moved up, you know, two spots in the USA Today coaches poll. So again, you know, they're at number 6 in the USA Today coaches poll. I think that Michigan State is showing, and you know, it's so crazy because you remember when MSU lost that game to Oregon, I went on the air, you know, and very fluently showed, hey, I don't know how this will bode as far as the Big Ten. Looking at how Michigan State lost, coupled with all of the other just kind of question mark games in the Big Ten conference for that weekend, I'm sitting there like, oh, there's no way a Big Ten team can make the 14 playoff. It just shows you just really never know with college football, my man. We could be saying a totally opposite thing 2 weeks from now. You never know. But as of right now, here on October 13th, yes, Michigan State has a legit shot at that playoff, Alex.
They sure do. 517-355-9527. What teams will make the playoff? What are your thoughts on the Big Ten East and West Division leaders? We'll get to your calls as soon as we get back from this break, but we just got to give Al a quick thank you and a sign off, Al. Hey, Al, enjoy Columbus, man. Let me know if you see Chris sailing over the ocean over there, and we'll talk to you. We'll see you tomorrow, man.
Hey, we'll do. I'll be back in the saddle tomorrow. Thanks a lot for holding it down, Alex.
Absolutely. Al Martin calling in from Columbus. Again, 517-355-9527. When we come back, Detroit Lions, we have Jock DeWitt here, all dressed in Lions gear. He'll break down the weekend with me. And then we'll talk Detroit Tigers. What do you do if you're the general manager of the Tigers? We'll be back. Woo, happy Monday. I'm getting a little fever, Jock. Monday, Columbus Day, some good music to start the day, and Al Martin, I can't believe it, Al, I can't believe it, Jock, Al Martin calling in from Columbus on Columbus Day. You can't get any more ironic than that, but Jock, I mean, you heard the conversation real quick, maybe we can just recap the Big Ten outlook. I mean, do you think that with everything going on, what you saw from the SEC, that a Big Ten team will make the playoff at this point?
I think that the only chance that a Big Ten team has to make the playoff, it's Michigan State. And I'm not saying that because I'm a student here, but there's just not another team that, you know, even with the non-conference schedule, there's just not another team that really would overtake another team, even a second team out of the SEC. So I think it's Michigan State or nothing in terms of playoff for the Big Ten.
There you have it. Again, 517-355-9527. We're talking MSU football, and now we're going to get into the Lions last game. Maybe you can give some thoughts on, maybe you can kick for the Lions. Who knows? Maybe Aaron Young back here can kick. Maybe I can kick for the Lions. We'll see. But Lions 117-3, Jock. You know, they punted the same amount of times as the Vikings with seven. Stafford, a little less than Bridgewater percentage-wise. I'm sure you have some thoughts on that. Stafford only 51% on the day. Bridgewater complete 62. The Bridgewater, he throws that interception in the end zone. That really broke the game wide open. But overall, 17-3, you can't complain from the defense, Jock. Initial thoughts, and then we'll get into a looming question I have for you.
Okay. Well, personally, I thought that Stafford didn't play great. Could have played better, but just to point out one thing, Golden Tate caught seven balls, and he dropped four or five of them. So you add that in there, Stafford's, you know, 23 for 33. It's not so bad, over 200 yards. But the defense really bailed him out again. And, you know, the three interceptions of Bridgewater, two coming from Tahir Whitehead, just it's a really good sign to see the defense play well week after week for the Lions.
Yeah, he'd be 23 of 37. So tie with Bridgewater. We'll see. We'll see. And anyway, but at the end of the day, I thought that this game was just not fun to watch, Jock. I just didn't enjoy it, man. I mean, if you're looking at the defense, you know, 3 points at all from the Vikings. Man, I thought with no defensive touchdowns allowed, I mean, as much as the offense was horrid, as much as they were with getting past third down conversions and whatnot, it just wasn't fun to me, man. And then seeing Prater, the new addition that was supposed to be the great kicker signing, the best kicker of the bunch, and then he couldn't get it done too, I just didn't enjoy it. I don't know about you. I just was bored.
I mean, low-scoring games, a lot of people don't think they're that exciting, but I actually appreciate it. It's just like a good pitching matchup in baseball. You know, you play a good defensive game. To me, it's like a different game. I did enjoy it just for the fact that the defense has been the anchor of this team so far this season. They played well again this week, so I enjoyed it, and hopefully the offense will get it together next week against New Orleans.
Hopefully, Jock. Now, with the game next week against New Orleans, I mean, that's a team that they don't have a great defense at all. So it comes to, let's see if Stafford comes back strong. We'll see if they get Calvin and Reggie back. For me, my looming question is, you saw them beat Minnesota yesterday. The week before, probably could have beat Buffalo.
They should have.
But obviously with the kicking issue, they couldn't. The looming question I have is this team not winnable without Calvin Johnson?
Well, they've shown they can win without Kelvin Johnson. You know, Kelvin Johnson's been limited in a couple games, sat out this past Sunday. But, no, I think this team can win without Kelvin Johnson, and it starts with Stafford targeting those tight ends. You've got Brandon Pettigrew and Eric Ebron, who they're in the game, and he's not really even looking to him.
I know, yeah.
So, you know, Pettigrew's got like four catches on the year, and Ebron caught a couple yesterday. But getting Fourier back would bode very well for the Lions. And I think that if they have everyone healthy, even with Kelvin Johnson out, even with Reggie Bush out, this team can win 11 games this year.
I hear you, but the thing I have to say about that is they beat bad teams without Kelvin Johnson. Do you think that they could beat a great team like Denver or like who they're going to play later in the year? Do you think they can have any chance of beating a great team like the Packers, even in their division? I don't see it, man.
I don't see them winning at Green Bay to close out the year, but no, I still think that they can compete. The offense can score, and the defense has proven they can shut teams down. So I would give the nod to a team like Denver, but, yeah, I still think they have a legitimate shot to compete.
Yeah, and you're relying on, like you said, you got Pettigrew and Ebron. You have your first-round pick. There are plenty of other first-rounders that are putting more production in than Ebron is so far. You're looking at a guy like Theo Riddick and all these guys that you've never heard of before in the league, and that's what they have to rely on because they're not getting any of their main weapons open. So the problem I have, Jock, is that as much as, yeah, they can win without Calvin Johnson, if they don't get him back or if something goes wrong, he tears his ACL for the year, it's not about them beating Green Bay, but it's about them beating any team that's good without Calvin Johnson. I don't see that happening. You saw it as much as they won 17-3. That Vikings team is horrible. The Bills played horrible. The Jets were horrible. I don't see any good team beating the Lions without Calvin Johnson, honestly.
Yeah, well, you know, that's you know, you're going to differ on opinion, but I think that Golden Tate actually could be a number one receiver on a couple different teams. He dropped four or five passes yesterday, but the kid, he's the man. He's a great athlete. He's a talented receiver. He's got great hands, great yards after the catch. You know, they don't really need Kelvin Johnson to win games, but it does help when you have the best receiver on your team.
517-355-9527. We're talking with Rocker Jock on Twitter. That's right. We're talking Lions football. You can tweet me also at Alex Scharg, A-L-E-X-S-C-H-A-R-G. Again, I'm filling in for Al Martin today, so if you're looking to see Al, he actually will be back tomorrow. He's actually delayed in Columbus on Columbus Day. Still saying hi to all the good people in Michigan calling in just a few minutes ago. But anyway, Jock, we've got to bring back basically the topic that everyone's talking about outside of Lions football. It has to be the Detroit Tigers, man. I mean, as soon as they lost that series against the Orioles, being swept, that nobody predicted, you have to wonder if you're Dave Dombrowski and you're trying to figure out your top three moves as Tigers manager, what do you do? 517-355-9527. Or if you want to talk anything MSU football, anything high school. I mean, we saw the concussion news you read earlier today about a high school ending their year because of concussions. Anything that's on your sports noggin, 517-355-9527, or tweet us at Current Sports, WKAR_sports. But, Jock, maybe you have an opinion on this. Maybe start with your number one thing the Tigers have to do. What do you do if you're Dave Dombrowski, man?
Well, if you're Dave Dombrowski, you really have to sit down and think, can we offer Scherzer a little more money? You know, is that something that Mike Ilitch wants to do? Without question, they have to get Victor Martinez back. Victor Martinez was the anchor in this lineup all year. He might finish second in the MVP voting to Mike Trout. And then third, I would like to see the Tigers go after a catcher. You know, you've had concussion problems with Avila this year. Let's see him try to go after Russell Martin, you know, see what they can get out of him. And then I guess a fourth thing, obviously, is they need to retool that bullpen. There's no question. The bullpen didn't get it done in the playoffs, and that's something that hurt them all year.
First of all, with the Scherzer thing, I mean, keep in mind, he's already at 15.5 on the salary. He's probably going to want 17 or 18, maybe more. Maybe he wants 20. And I'm not so sold that the Tigers are going to honestly give that to him. That's the problem at the end of the day is, and also, is it worth it to give it to Scherzer? You saw he didn't pull it out in the playoffs. He gave up some big hits when it mattered. So this is a guy also, peak of his 20s. He's probably not going to get that much better after this year. He might have one or two good years left, but he's probably wanting long-term, and the Tigers won't give it to him in my eyes, Jock, because they know that it's the peak of his career. That's my thing about Scherzer, Jock, is I think you can take that money, spend it elsewhere. You already had to send one to the bullpen because you had too many starters. A fifth starter isn't that essential. You don't need a Cy Young winner as your fifth starter. So for me, that's the thing I have to say about Scherzer. I agree. Great pitcher, but it's not my number one priority or not one of even my top three, to be honest. Second thing, with Victor Martinez, this is another guy. Sure, he's 35 years old. He had a phenomenal career, almost, you know, MVP votes. But with $12 million a year that he's getting with a club option, yeah, he's going to get the club option most likely. But he's probably going to want $15 million easy to stay. I mean, this is a contract year. He's probably going to want more money. And I don't know if the Tigers are going to be willing to cough up that much off of probably one of the better years that he'll have. I mean, at 35 years old, it's only going to go down from here, let's be honest. I mean, this isn't Nolan Ryan here who's going to be pitching in his 50s throwing smoke. So, I mean, that's the thing about Victor Martinez. At the end of the day, my number one priority has to be the bullpen, like you said. They saw Hanrahan flop. They saw Jim Johnson flop. They saw Phil Koch flop. They saw Jabba Chamberlain. Need I say more? So at the end of the day, you're looking at upcoming relief pitchers. I'm going to throw a few names at you who I've kind of researched so far. I'm looking at one, Andrew Miller.
Yep.
You saw him at the Orioles. Remember that name? I mean, former Tiger. You saw him as a starting pitcher. Never worked out. You know, top draft pick. I think he was out in North Carolina.
Yep.
Never worked out. And that's a guy who, like Infante, when you got rid of Infante, when you got rid of Pena, when you got rid of Young, I mean, this is a chance where they can kind of retool guys that they let away. I mean, you remember the Guillen trade when they gave away Santiago. They got him back again. I see a similar thing happening with Andrew Miller if they can take him and if he wants to come back, Jock.
Yeah. Andrew Miller would be a great fit for the bullpen. He can pitch out of the seventh, out of the eighth. He gets lefties and righties out, which is very key for a late-inning guy. And he's left-handed. You don't find a lot of left-handers that throw, mid-90s. So that would definitely be a great pickup for the Tigers.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, And let's make it a little comical here. Do you want another North Carolina product after what's going on right now with North Carolina athletics? He might have been one of the few. I don't know, but that's a great one because left-hander, like you said, high throwing. They haven't had a high thrower since Rondon went down. Mm-hmm. So that's an option. I'm looking at Dave Robertson, could be another feasible one. Sergio Romo getting up there in years, but could be a guy that's been a little bit consistent. So those are a few names I'm looking at. A few others. So, you know, aside from the bullpen, Jock, that's top priority. My second, which I don't know if you agree, they have to find a center fielder, man. I mean, sure, Rajay Davis, he went down with a little bit of the injury. But at the end of the day, they lost their true center fielder. You can't rely on Don Kelly, for goodness sake, to get in center field and be an everyday center fielder.
Right.
So for me, I'm looking for a splash at center field. Remember Cameron Maybin? I mean, maybe that's a guy that he's coming towards a peak. You can probably get some good years out of him. Maybe Desmond Jennings, a guy you can probably get relatively cheap. Didn't have a great year, hit in the lower 230s, 240s at the end of the year. But for me, it's center field. And lastly, catcher. I have to agree with you there. Avila, if you look at his numbers, it's slump, 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 slump. It's not going any up. He went from 270 to 230 and now 218. I mean, that's not a good sign, Jock. I mean, thoughts on center field and catcher?
Well, center field might not be the top priority. As you know, Andy Dirks will probably be healthy this upcoming season. So,
right.
You know, they'll have JD Martinez and Andy Dirks, Rajay Davis, Carrera possibly, and if they re-sign Torrey, but it would not be a bad thing to shore up the bench. You know, Don Kelly being your best bench guy really doesn't sit well with me, so I completely agree there.
Yeah. 517-355-9527. We got about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes left in the show. But anything, Tigers, Michigan State football, college football, whatever you'd like to talk about, we'll get to it. You could also tweet us at Alex Scharg, AlexSCHARG, or WKAR_sports. Well, Jock, we got to touch on this with 2 minutes left. Weekend winners, man. There was a lot going on in the sporting world. Maybe a personal anecdote of yours that you enjoyed, a personal story you saw in sports on ESPN, or some feature you saw. What'd you do this weekend? What'd you handle your weekend with?
Well, my weekend was filled with football. And Saturday... My weekend winner is one of my old classmates who's still a student and athlete here,
yeah.
Darian Harris. With that pick six late in the fourth quarter, he had a couple monster hits during that game, and it was good to see him come back and perform like that after he was replaced the game before against Nebraska.
Yeah, Darian Harris was certainly good. I mean, what about Golden Tate, your boy? I thought he had a good showing.
No, he dropped 4 or 5 balls. Not happening.
You still harping on him, though. You still liked him on that.
Oh, yeah, I still do like him, yeah, but he had a bad game in my eyes.
I see. How about the Lions defense, man? I mean, best in the league. Would you have thought at the beginning of the season Lions would be best in the league?
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
Yeah, for me, it's got to be, I said it last week, Chloe Reinick again, man. I mean, this was someone who had a lot of potential. She kind of came out of nowhere, out of the folds. Had another career high with hitting percentage. She was hitting in the 400s this weekend with MSU volleyball. They swept Iowa, who, granted, not a great team. With Nebraska, yeah, they lost Nebraska, but they're a great team. So you got to go to MSU volleyball. And, hey, man, you got to go to the Lions defense. Like I said, I totally agree. Well, I can't believe we ran out of time, man. That was fast. That went way too fast. But that's going to do it for your Current Sports. Again, Alex Scharg filling in for Al Martin. You've been listening to Current Sports on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Again, I'm Alex Scharg filling in for Al Martin. As always, take care, and I'll pull it. Be easy, people.